What?
Don't let go!
Previously on Blockbuster.
Get the bikes!
Hey!
Dad's gonna kill me.
James Francis!
I'm getting what you asked for.
No, you are not, Jim. This is not working out.
James Cameron.
What? Me? No. Come on now. God damn it. Come on, Jim.
This is a dream you had? That's not really a story.
I want to direct it.
You? Listen, it's a bad idea, okay?
It's time to look for another career.
Dad, I know you think I'm making a mistake.
The film business
But I need to see this through.
I'm Matt Schrader, and Blockbuster starts now.
Oh, man, thanks for getting these tickets. This is going to be so far out.
Megan, we're over here.
Memorial Day weekend, 1977. Just days ago, a dejected George Lucas sat in a diner on Hollywood Boulevard, unaware his film Star Wars was playing across the street at the Chinese Theater. And 22-year-old James Cameron and his friends had come to that theater to see the film. Today, among those lined up along the Hollywood Walk of Fame, is an up-and-coming English director, Ridley Scott.
This is unbelievable for a matinee. Look at these costumes. I suppose they're characters in the film?
I have to assume so.
Ridley was here with his producer, David Putnam, who'd scored tickets to a sold-out 2 o'clock screening. Ridley had just premiered his first film, The Duelists, at the Cannes Film Festival and was nominated for the festival's grand prize.
Gentlemen, tickets.
He was riding high, and before screening his film in Los Angeles, he had a few hours to see this sure-to-be-campy Star Wars movie that was causing such a stir.
Oh, right there. Those seats in the middle.
As everyone filled into the theater, Ridley and his producer got the perfect seats, 8th row center. This auditorium felt alive, like an enormous roller coaster ride. From the first frames of the film's enormous space cruiser in the beginning of the film, to the final throne room scene as John Williams' music swelled and the end credits rolled, the theater shook with energy. Ridley had never seen or felt audience participation like this. He took note of the first credit, written and directed by George Lucas.
I don't know who George Lucas is, but fuck George Lucas.
Ridley joked, but he was miserable with envy. He knew this George Lucas had changed everything. The special effects were unparalleled, the music emotional, and this world felt both nostalgic and like a giant leap forward. Ridley had already decided on his next film, but the future had changed. When producers at Brandywine Productions...
What if I ask your opinion on something?
All right.
I'm filling out these
reports. Hemdale Pictures, can I help you?
December 1982, London.
Hold one moment, please. Did you hear that?
Is that someone at the door?
It's open. Bloody hell!
A dark figure had broken the door off its hinges, exposing the bare doorframe and kicking up dust lit up by the fluorescent lights above.
What's going on?
Hemdale producer John Daly rushed in to see a man standing in the center of the doorframe, wearing a black leather jacket, a ripped t-shirt underneath, and tall black boots.
Sir?
What do we do?
The man walked forward, slowly.
Sir? We're calling the police. Sir, stop! Don't move!
The man stopped. He had lacerations on his face and gold foil on his teeth. His expression was cold and unflinching. Slowly, he turned his head 90 degrees to the right, took two steps, and sat down in a chair in Hemdale's front lobby, looking straight ahead.
Sir,
What is he doing?
He's just staring.
Is someone calling the police?
What do we do? Is he okay?
Look at the cuts on his face.
Sir, this is a place of business. You can't be here.
The man didn't move.
Is he on drugs?
Oh, thank God, the police!
Hey.
James and Gail entered the room carrying portfolios with pitch materials and were greeted by the panicked faces of the receptionist and producer John Daly.
Everyone okay?
Who are you?
I'm Jim Cameron. This is producer Galen Hurd.
Hello.
We have a meeting at 10 a.m.?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm very sorry. We've just had a very strange...
I see you've already met the Terminator.
It was brilliant. Pitch-perfect performance art. Lance Henriksen turned at them and smiled.
I'm sorry to have startled you. We'll of course pay for the door.
In the meeting, John Daly saw a rising star in James, impressed by his passion and detailed drawings. Hemdale Pictures would partner with Orion Pictures and HBO. The Terminator was greenlit, with the provision that James hire an actor relatively well known to anchor the film, and suddenly all James' work began to pay off. He got his first paycheck for writing the script, alleviating the financial pressures. He and Bill Wisher rented an apartment together as they began to search for their perfect cast. The executives at Hemdale and Orion made it clear they wanted James to cast someone larger than life in the film, whatever that meant. Australian actor Mel Gibson of Mad Max turned down the... January 1983. James was putting finishing touches on a detailed storyboard with filming 2 months away. He'd sketched every shot in the film so he could focus his time on set with the crew and actors.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
Hey there.
I have some really bad news.
Is everything okay?
I just got off the phone with... Dino De Laurentiis?
That was a name everyone who was in Hollywood for more than a minute knew. Dino De Laurentiis was one of the most successful producers in Hollywood, having made hundreds of films over the past 3 decades.
Yeah, well, as you know, they're making a sequel to Conan the Barbarian with Arnold.
Yeah, but not for like 8 months.
9 months.
9 months. So what's the problem?
Well, they sent me a clause in Arnold's contract that says... No, Jim... We'll figure this out, but...
What does it say?
Basically, he's not allowed to do anything else before that movie comes out.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's an option in Arnold's contract. They say they're exercising. I've been trying to fix this, but... It's straight from Dino himself. He says they have Arnold through the end of this year to film a sequel, and he can't do anything else until after that.
That is one hell of a deal.
Well, they want to build a franchise around him.
Fuck!
I'm so sorry, Jim. Do we recast?
Well, we can't recast this late, and Arnold's been doing weapon training for months for this, so...
So we delay filming.
I guess we have to.
They'll wrap this time next year, so we can start a couple weeks after.
In one afternoon... All momentum James and Gail had grown from the seed of an idea came to a soul-crushing halt.
Damn it.
I know.
You know, this Hollywood thing is a real bitch.
In the months that followed, James' Terminator script had taken on a life of its own around Hollywood, continuing to build interest in gossip even after its sale. Two producers, David Giler and Walter Hill, were impressed enough, they set a meeting with James to discuss him writing a futuristic version of Spartacus, set in space. It wasn't a great fit.
Well, thank you for coming in, Jim.
Sure.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. Maybe there's something else we can work on in the future.
Just as James was walking toward the door...
Maybe this Alien sequel, Walter?
Oh, yeah. Jim, you've seen Alien.
James spun around.
It's one of my favorites.
Really? Well, we're looking to do a sequel.
A sequel had been long anticipated, but these producers were concerned about watering down the original with a subpar second film.
Do you guys have a script?
We have a basic story.
An outline, really.
Well, let me see. Oh, here it is. Huh. It's real short, just a summary.
You want to just read that? Might as well.
Sure. It's nothing yet, really.
Action!
On the next episode of Blockbuster, the Terminator begins filming.
Cut. Let's do it again.
And runs out of money.
Walk forward to the station wagon and punch out the window.
Punch it out?
Just give it your best shot.
James and Gail face their first hurdle as a couple.
I think we need to think this through.
What do you mean?
And James orchestrates an elaborate plan to win over a studio.
Jim, just hold on.
I gotta tell you, I don't think it's meant to be.
Whoa.
That's coming up on episode 5 of Blockbuster, the story of James Cameron. I'm series creator Matt Schrader.
I'm sound designer Peter Bavitz.
I'm composer Fernando Arroyo Lascurain.
And this is our creator chat about episode 4 you just heard from Blockbuster, the story of James Cameron. We start this episode with the story of another up-and-coming legend, Ridley Scott. And he decides he's going to go see Star Wars with his producer, David Putnam. And Ridley has a very similar reaction to what James had in realizing the whole cinematic landscape has just changed. So he shelves his next movie and decides he's going to do the space horror movie Alien. And of course, by the end of this episode, we learn James is being given a chance to write a long anticipated sequel.
Yeah. And I guess it shows the power of the art form, which is film.
Yep.
Because it's pretty interesting how different people's films can inspire others. And all these are brilliant filmmakers, right? From Spielberg, Lucas, to Ridley, to James Cameron, and they inspire each other. So it just makes the whole film experience and the film as the art form so much more powerful just because they learn from each other. And at the time, 1979, it was Randy and James in their local movie theater watching Alien. Think about it.
Yep.
And who would have guessed? Both of them, James and Randy, would be involved in the sequel.
And just a few years after it, too.
That's pretty interesting.
Fernando, this is also an episode where you begin to introduce a more 1980s sound to the score.
Yeah, as we were developing the idea of the different stages of James's career, we thought of maybe traveling into that synth time of the 80s scores a little bit during the Terminator. I started to introduce it as James has his nightmare in the previous episode that really sparks the idea for Terminator.
Right.
And then later, we haven't really introduced much of it and the main idea of the synths until he meets Arnold and Arnold comes up with this, how this character should be played.
We are kind of hinting at that sound from the last episode.
Yes.
We didn't talk about it last week, but it was there.
Yeah, it was definitely there, especially during the nightmare scene. It's in the second part of the nightmare scene. We can really start to hear the synths coming in.
One of my favorite parts of this cue, it grows, it builds. Mm-hmm. As James is meeting Arnold and the Terminator starts to get this momentum, this was one of those first musical